My name is Michael Warrant, and today we're going to continue with a series of play readings. Last week I did a series on Eastern European drama reflecting current issues of East-West relationship, primarily from the standpoint and perspective of East German. Eastern Europeans, Czechoslovakian, Soviet Union, Polish, East German playwright. And this week, the play reading focused again on East-West relationship and arms controls. Last week, I did a brief reading from the play we're going to be reading from today, A Walk in the Woods by Lee Blessing. And last week, I found it very appropriate, both because the play is set in kind of a retreat place. It's in Switzerland. How many people have seen this production play? I was fortunate enough several years ago when I took a group of students to London to have seen Alec Guinness and Edward Harriman do this production. And Alec Guinness is, I think, 85, 86 at this point. And he was brilliant in the production. I am also connected to this play because I know the playwright, Lee Blessing, and I've directed his wife, Jeannie Blake. And for anybody who's from Minnesota, he's a Minnesota playwright. So I'm especially proud of that connection for this play. Today I've drafted once again my good friend and fellow actor Robert Nairn to join me in reading scenes from this play. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to read the whole play, but what we thought we'd do is read a scene from the beginning of the play and then a scene from the end of the play. And let me kind of set up the play for you so you have an idea of what this play is about. The playwright took the idea from this play, as many playwrights take ideas from many sources, took the idea for this play from a small news article or a comment in a news article that he read in a paper that said that during arms negotiation in Switzerland, the American negotiator and the Russian negotiator went for a walk. And from that walk, it was speculated that many agreements were formed. And so he took that idea, simply A Walk in the Woods, the title, Walk in the Woods, took the idea of what would happen, or what happened out there where no reporters were by, and what if these walks happened regularly. And so what we're going to meet today is a Russian arms negotiator in Switzerland, an older gentleman from Russia, and a young American in his mid-40s, an arms negotiator who's just arrived in the country. And they are meeting, as we see in the first sign, in the first scene, for the first time in the woods. The play was originally written in 1987. It won the Drama Critics Award of the Best New Play in 1987. It was originally produced in Yale Repertory Theater. It was then produced at the La Jolla Playhouse in San Diego, and then went on to Broadway for a run and went to several places. And one of the most famous performances was with Robert Prosky and Sam Waterston in Washington, D.C., where the entire audience was made up of State Department officials and diplomats, which would have been a hard act to follow for any actor. We're going to be reading scene one, act one, scene one. A mountain slope on the outskirts of Geneva, late summer, a sunny morning. The path is well kept but rustic. It leads to a wooden bench in a little clearing. The overall effect is light, airy, idyllic. But Vinnick and Honeyman enter. They wear suits, conservative but stylish.
So I told them. This was your reporter, you understand, a network reporter. I told him when Brezhnev was in power, he always began Politburo meetings by saying, the survival of the Soviet Union depends on the total annihilation of America.
You told him that?
How was I to know he'd believe it? He actually filed that report with his network. It was nearly broadcast. But finally, someone had the sense to ask him, who told you that? Andrei Botvinnik? And they cancelled it. They know I make jokes. That reporter now, I think, is covering restaurants. Do you like this place? Shall we sit?
Do you think we should stop?
Why not?
Well, we spoke of this as a walk in the woods.
We are walking. We are sitting. We are walking again.
But the reporters?
The reporters expect us when they see us. They love for us not to be on time. Much speculation. More column inches. Come, sit down.
All right.
Fine, fine, fine. Now we are sitting. This is good. Trees are lovely in the late summer here. So full. You came at a good time.
It's beautiful.
Have you been to Switzerland before?
No.
Well, you must enjoy the lake, the mountain trails, and so on and so forth.
I will, thank you.
Mr. McIntyre loved the trails. He was very fond of hiking.
Yes, I know.
He told you?
Yes.
How's he doing, Mr. McIntyre?
Very well. He's with a law firm now in New York.
Really? He's not back at Arms Control Agency?
No, he thought he'd try the private sector.
Aha, the private sector. Wonderful thing you Americans have, to think a refuge from government service. Ah, Mr. McIntyre. They come and they go, eh?
Does that bother you?
Not when someone as pleasant as you is sent to replace them.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
We're beginning to sound like a pair of diplomats.
We are a pair of diplomats.
Well, negotiators.
And negotiators, of course.
I mean, that is our primary function.
Yes.
Diplomacy comes second, in a sense. It's really someone else's job.
If you insist.
I don't insist. I'm just trying to be clear, that's all.
Oh, you are clear.
Tell me, why have we taken a walk in the woods?
What do you mean?
I mean, why? Does your government have something to communicate to us about our new proposal, or...
No. Nothing like that. There are many ways to discuss a proposal. We don't have to come out here.
It's a very good proposal.
I know it is.
Very good.
Absolutely. On my side, we are all in disarray, believe me. But that's not why we're here. Today, I only want you to see the woods.
To see the woods?
Yes. And talk. Simply. Man to man. Moshina se moshionwa, da?
Man to man.
The woods are very useful. For months we will be trading proposals across a table. Here, there is no table. We can relax, ignore things, talk about trees, lakes, whatever.
I see. The reporters will be disappointed.
Why?
They think we're out here getting real work done. You're not interested in doing any work out here?
What do you call work? Only what we do at the table. This is valuable too.
What? Sunning ourselves on a bench?
Tell me, do you plan to be a very formal negotiator?
Should I be?
No, please. Anything but formal. Was the one thing I didn't like about McIntyre. We negotiated for 2 years and he never changed his position.
The American position changed?
No, no. His position. Sitting there at the table. He always sat straight up. For 2 years, he never relaxed. He felt it gave him a moral advantage. It didn't. He looked like a dog waiting for his supper.
I'll tell him that.
Would you? It's the one thing I think he should change. Formality allows many things, but it does not allow friendship.
I think formality is very important.
Formality is simply anger with its hair combed. I could never make a friend out of McIntyre. It was a great disappointment. 2 years he sat there, 1 meter away. Over 100 sessions. We never became friends. After all, what does that say about me?
Is it good, do you think, for arms negotiators to be friends?
Someone has to.
But is that, strictly speaking, our jobs?
Perhaps it isn't. You like the trees here? They're very neutral.
I'm only saying perhaps two disinterested and more formal parties can do a better job of negotiating.
Tell me, what do you think of the nose on the face of the Reuters correspondent?
The right... Why are you...
Quick, what do you think?
It's very large.
That's enormous! I can't look at anything else in press conferences. You wait. You'll stare at it too.
Mr. Bodnick,
But please, Andres.
Andre.
Andrushka, if you like. Perhaps I could call you Johnny.
John would be fine. Johnny. Andre, I appreciate your desire to become friends. Indeed, in many of my former negotiations, I did become friends with those on the other side. After a successful settlement, not before.
Ah, I see.
I think it's important for both of us to remember that there are issues.
Oh, of course.
Which must be resolved.
Certainly.
Making friends is a fine thing, but not on someone else's time, so to speak. Do you follow me?
Oh, yes.
When I took this post, it was to bring something new here. A new formula. A breakthrough.
Yes, yes, sir. A breakthrough.
A plan I personally helped develop for more than a year.
Wonderful. Welcome. A new man with a new plan.
I didn't have to come here, you know. I could have stayed safe behind at my desk in Washington. Someone more like McIntyre could have been chosen. But since I have first-hand knowledge of this proposal, and since I myself have a strong record as a negotiator...
At a lower level.
At a lower level. I've been asked to work this one through. I have a lot to offer, Andre. I know these issues. They haven't just sent me to enunciate policy. I'm here to get something done. I hope you'll want to help me.
Whatever I can contribute to the spirit of things.
I don't want the spirit of an agreement. I want an agreement. An honest one, fair to both sides.
I see. Well, who knows? As friends, we will certainly...
No, listen.
Yes?
What I'm saying about friendship is that it takes us away from the central point.
Which is?
Commitment. Mutual commitment to the hard work of negotiating a treaty. We need to find our rewards there, in difficult problems, worked on together and solved together. That's the sort of personal relationship I'm seeking here. That's what I would like. Andre? How do you feel about what I'm saying?
Well...
I'd really like to know.
Would you?
Very much.
Very well, I feel...
Yes?
You have a string on your suit.
A string? A thread, you mean?
A thread, yes. Here. So, now you look fine. What shall we talk about?
But you're trying to change the subject.
I am?
Yes.
Really? I'm sorry. What was it, please?
I was told you liked changing the subject.
Not at all. That's a very nice suit, by the way.
Mr. McIntyre said that's your favorite ploy.
I never use ploys. Is it Italian?
English.
Really? Everything I have is Italian.
Are you done talking about this now?
About what?
About suits.
If you like.
Yes, I do like. Thank you.
Don't mention it.
So, will you answer my question?
What question?
My question about whether or not you agree that we shouldn't be friends.
Was that the subject before that I changed?
Yes, it was.
Ah, well, my answer is, of course, that I agree with you.
You agree?
Yes.
That we shouldn't be friends?
Yes.
That's not what you said before.
But then I didn't know your view. Now I do, and I want to agree with you.
You want to agree with me?
Yes.
Why?
Because you're my friend.
I can't be your friend. That's my whole question.
Yes, I agree.
You can't agree.
But I do.
You're contradicting yourself.
I know, but I won't go to any length to keep a friend.
I was told you liked to contradict yourself.
Will you pardon me a minute?
Is there something wrong with your eye?
Yes. No. They become very dry, that's all. It is most uncomfortable. I'm sorry.
Are you seeing a doctor?
Several of them. Over the last month or two, Swiss doctors. It's nothing.
What did they say?
You want this for your files?
I was only...
I will tell you. They tell me I have Sjögren's syndrome.
Sjögren's syndrome? What's that mean?
It means I have dry eyes.
That's all?
That's all. Dry eyes, dry nose, dry mouth. Whatever should be wet is dry.
What can they do for it?
Nothing. They told me to eat wet food. They gave me artificial tears. Live with it, they said. Klee did.
Klee?
Paul Klee, the Swiss artist. He too apparently had this problem. The doctors took great pride in telling me. Imagine having national pride in a disease. I'm sorry for the delay. That was not a ploy. However, only a sickness. What were we discussing?
Perhaps we should be getting back if you don't feel well.
No, I'm fine.
Still, it's probably time.
We just got here. Don't you like it?
I like it fine. It's just that I prefer...
A table. Yes, I know.
No, not a table. What's set over it? I need some seriousness. I think we owe our governments that much, don't you?
Do you like me?
Andre...
Answer my question.
I'm not going to answer your question. I'm going back now.
Without me? What would the reporters think of that? We leave together, return separately. Significant rumors. So tell me, aren't you embarrassed to be an American?
No.
I am. To be a Russian, I mean.
Why?
Look at us. Americans and Russians. The world's great powers. The world's great fools. Year after year, we sit here among the mountaintops. We talk about our weapons, so many of them. Weapons on land, in the sea, in the air, in space. Too many. Let's get rid of some, we say, before there's an accident. We talk so seriously. We calculate. We make proposals. And we nearly always fail. It's embarrassing. The best we can do is take away a few missiles once in a while, for show. Beyond that, nothing. If the world wasn't terrified of us, it would last.
Well, that may be, but...
Why are we failing? I ask myself this. For years we've been here. We keep failing.
I think the reason that...
I know the reason. I have finally discovered who is to blame. Would you like to know?
Andre...
It's not America, and it's not the Soviet Union. Ask me who is to blame.
Andre...
Ask me.
Who, Andre? Who is to blame?
Switzerland. No, John. Let me explain. Then we can go.
You're being ridiculous.
Not if you listen. Switzerland has two things only, mountains and peace. Thousands of mountains, centuries of peace. Peaceful trees, peaceful lakes, peaceful people. You can't invade it. Too many mountains. Besides, there's nothing here. Only trees and Swiss people. So what does mankind use Switzerland for? Press conferences.
Andre.
But what happens? We sit across the table and look very grave, and talk and debate and argue about imminent world destruction. Then we leave the table, go outside, and what do we see? Rich, happy, peaceful people. Unharmed buildings, no barricades, no rifles, not even littering. We breathe air that hasn't known a war for centuries. Suddenly things look better. Why agree to a treaty now? We'll wait. I tell you, my friend, the real problem is Switzerland itself.
Do you always joke about these matters, Jerry?
Who's joking? We should put the table at the bottom of a missile silo. Then we would negotiate. I have seriously suggested this to my superiors.
And what did they say?
They said to stop joking.
May I ask you a personal question?
Of course.
Why in heaven's name haven't you been replaced?
Mr. McIntyre also asked me this question.
What's the answer?
You've done your research, I presume. Perhaps you should tell me.
You're a very good negotiator. That's why they keep you. You can say no longer than any other people. You can say it with a frown, you can say it with a smile, you can say no and still be so charming, we'll think you said yes. You dress well, you speak English well, you're good with the media, most of all you know how to take orders, at least when it really counts. And the orders are always the same. Say no and look good doing it. They keep you here because you give them something special. Not just a man who can say no, but a personality.
Is that how I'm seen? How very flattering.
I've done other research. Want to hear?
Certainly. I love to hear about me.
In your private conversations, you are less dependable. It's believed your leaders worry quite a bit over your congeniality towards Westerners. You have a penchant for changing the subject. You contradict yourself. You deliberately misunderstand things. Your behavior is sometimes seen as childish.
Childish?
Mr. McIntyre wasn't sure if you were in complete control of these conversational gambits. He wondered if they weren't genuine liabilities that would grow worse with time and destroy your effectiveness. But do you know what I think? You know what my personal opinion is?
What?
That you are in full control of what you're doing, both formally and informally. That's the very word effectiveness, that the very word effectiveness in your mind means obstruction. That you, and perhaps your country, are fundamentally dedicated to not finding a significant agreement.
You're very blunt. But this is refreshing. Please, go on. You're doing so well.
I'm not the only one in my country with this opinion. The fact is, I was appointed for this job precisely because it was thought only someone of my special talents could work with you at all.
Special talents. Yes, I must admit, we were very impressed when you were chosen. A man with no experience in Geneva.
I had experience elsewhere.
At a lower level.
And was effective.
A man who speaks only English?
I speak technical Russian.
No one speaks technical Russian. It's like saying I speak algebra. A man who...
You're ignoring one positive.
There's a positive.
I'm an extremely effective negotiator. That doesn't mean I say no well. It means I say yes well, at the right time, when the right work has been done. When I negotiate, I find an agreement.
So you think we will agree, huh? Eventually.
Yes, we will.
Perhaps you're right. But tell me something. Even if we do agree, do you think it'll matter? You like the mountain air? I don't. I come from Leningrad. Sea air. That is air you can feel. It has weight. This air is too thin. Too sterile.
Too healthy, you mean?
Only oxygen. It's not enough. You know, I have breathed the air in many places.
Andre, I am not interested in the air you have breathed. I'm interested in creating an agreement, nothing else. And yes, I do believe it's going to matter. I think you'll be surprised, in fact, how much it does matter. Now I'm going to go back, not because I feel defeated or hopeless. I'm going back because I feel we've done as much as we can do today, and tomorrow, over a table, we'll do more. And I'm going whether you come along or not.
I would love to go now. I'm glad you've suggested it.
Do we understand one another?
What do you mean?
Do we understand each other? I want to feel this conversation has served a purpose.
Really? Why?
Because all conversations should.
They should?
Yes, they should. Do we understand each other?
Of course we do. We're friends.
No, we are not friends.
We're becoming friends.
We're not becoming
friends. Of course we are.
Henri, do you know what they call you in the American delegation? The crab. Not because you're mean or irritable, because you never go in a straight line.
Are those Italian shoes?
Don't talk about my shoes!
They are Italian.
They're French.
French shoes? Who would buy French shoes? I can get you a good Italian.
I'm happy with the shoes I have, thank you.
You know, you have a great personal charm. You're much warmer than McIntyre.
I am much more persistent than McIntyre. I'm here to make a treaty with you, not a friendship. You can behave as erratically as you like. My offer stands. Work with me, please.
Where do you get your time?
I'm going.
This is wonderful. We're doing so well together. When should we take another walk?
Never.
Never? Are you sure, my friend?
I'm sure.
Very well. Whatever you say, after all, we're here to agree.
Okay. Any general reactions and responses to the play thus far in light of what actually happens? Responses, reactions. Okay, yeah.
Well, just I'm not as familiar with the Russian culture as I am with some other cultures, but I know that it's a very American tendency to want to do the work first and become friends later. And many other cultures want to establish that relationship first and build that sense of trust and then do the work afterwards. And
this is a reversal of that.
Well, the Russian wants, yeah. I mean, the opposite, the relationship first. And it's, I like the way that it's played out. And, I mean, that it's in the script, the writing of that.
Yeah, I think one of the things I think that's really charming about the play is that it really pops our balloons about the traditional view of what we think Russians are about. In the same way, it's kind of interesting to note this play was written probably within a year after Gorbachev came into power, and I think one of the things that Gorbachev has done in terms of our perception of what Russians are like, I mean, we lived with Brezhnev and Khrushchev and these very sober people, and suddenly, having someone who is open and human and like to press the flesh and all the rest when he tours throughout the world has changed our view, I think. And I think this play came in right at that same time of Gorbachev.
Do you see an age difference?
Yes. Yes.
You are how old? I mean, I don't mean really. I mean, in the
Very much my age. I would say he's mid 40s, I would say probably the other character, as is usually played, is mid 60s. So there's like a 20-year
difference between. Robert's not that age.
But. Well, Robert's not cast as God.
That's right.
Doesn't have braided beard.
No, he talks a lot. So I. Any other?
Well, the other thing is that the Russian obviously has had a lot more experience of that than the American diplomat this time.
And I think one of the things that the playwright pokes fun of a little bit is what is sometimes called the MBA-ocracy, and the way our country operates so often. And I think it's very difficult. And I think one of the things the play does, as you'll see in Act Two, is that gets changed a little bit. Yeah?
The Russian made me think of President Biden. No, they did, because he used to have that.
Oh, no, I don't worry into that word
no.
at all.
I think from all that's been written about Reagan, the his greatest gift was the one-on-one conversation with another person, because apparently he charmed everyone that he came in contact with, whether there was substance or not. Everybody was really pleased with Reagan as a person, personality.
You got the feeling that the Russian was playing a little bit with the, he was used to Americans, he had some opinions about how Americans reacted, and he was sort of toying with the Americans.
Yeah, I think that's definitely built in play.
Would you say in our stereotype that American culture or diplomats that represented here would be like a masculine approach, whereas these other cultures would be maybe more of a feminine approach? Do you know what I mean? In terms of the bottom line and action goal directive, get that done first, and then we worry about
I think you got, I think the goal decisions. I think the goal direction thing, and you don't, I think, then they be a little bit, friendships don't happen immediately, especially in formal situations.
Possibly if the Russian was trying to get acquainted with the American. Yeah. He didn't know him. He was a new person. Obviously, he had known this other fellow for a long time. And I think he was really trying to get to know the man he was going to deal with.
And to feel that
right.
out a little bit. Right. I think we're going to, I want to get a real feeling. We're going to read a little bit from Act 2, Scene 1. This is a little farther along in the play, and then we're going to read the, as, and I hope we can get through all the Act 2, Scene 2. Like last night's performance, you are seeing it for the first time. We haven't read this before, and time is, so you're getting it fresh. This is Act 2, Scene 1, the same scene. This is late winter, a gloomy day, early afternoon. Honeyman enters quickly, looking around. He wears a top coat. Suddenly, Botvinnik hurries on from the opposite direction. He seems to be chasing something. He looks here and there along the ground, ignoring Honeyman. Honeyman suddenly sees something in the woods and calls out, "That way! He's over here!"
"Where?"
"There, by that log." "Now the other side, right underneath."
"You mean this? Oh, damn, Kachotu!"
"What, Andre?"
He ran right by me. He got away. I'm too old for this. I used to be able to catch them every time."
"You did? Alone?"
"Of course alone. You must catch a rabbit alone. Otherwise, there is no challenge. If there was snow, I would have seen his tracks. I would have had him."
"Are you all right?"
"It's nothing. My muscle. I'm sorry. Did this surprise you?"
"A little.
I always try to catch rabbits. I used to, anyway, when I was a boy."
"You did? Why?"
"It was fun. I was very fast once. Really, I chased them all the time. It became a reflex, yes. Whenever I was out walking, if I saw a rabbit, whoosh, into the woods. And today, to come here to see a rabbit on the bench sitting here, I couldn't help myself. You understand?"
"Certainly."
"I caught a lot of them when I was young. Finally, I stopped.
Why?
The war came. We couldn't leave Leningrad. I caught rats instead. For food. But that's the war. And you do not wish me to mention the war. So I'm sorry, and I shut up. Yes? It's pretty out here, eh? This time of year. Away from that little room. Months and months in the same room. Negotiating.
Don't complain. You've had the last 2 weeks in Moscow.
You think they don't have little rooms in Moscow? No, this is best, to be outdoors. It improves concentration, I think, to get away, to sit quiet in the world.
How was Moscow?
Hmm?
Moscow, how was it? You had some fairly important meetings there. I thought you asked me out here so you could fill me in.
What? Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
So?
What?
Fill me in.
You want to start right now?
Why not?
It's just that it's so good to be here again, among the trees.
Is anything wrong?
Hmm? No.
You seem a little distracted.
I am not. I'm completely concentrated.
It's just that you seem...
How I seem is not important. How I am is important.
How are you?
I should have caught that rabbit.
Andre.
When I was a boy, people were amazed at me. Amazed! So quick, they would say. He catches them with his hands, his bare hands. When was the last time we were here?
A month ago.
What did we talk about?
Modify negotiation procedures. Soviet-American relations. And Babe Ruth.
Ah! Babe Ruth. The Sultan of Swat.
Andre.
Magnificent athlete. Larger than life.
Would you mind if we don't start with the frivolous side of things today?
You don't want to?
No.
Why not?
Because you have news for me. You've been in Moscow, you're back now, you have news. I want to hear it.
What if it's not good news?
I want to hear it. Your government rejected our proposal, didn't it?
Not exactly.
What do you mean?
They didn't reject your proposal itself. They rejected what your president had turned the proposal into.
Which is?
Which is, in their words, a cynical public relations scheme.
It's not cynical.
It is. From the moment he announced it to the world.
He had to announce it.
Why? When we had not agreed to it yet.
We never agree to anything. You accepted one small point before our election, and since then, nothing. Zero. No movement at all. All winter. He couldn't wait any longer.
You should have stopped him.
I tried. I argued him out of going public on this 3 times in the past 5 months. You know that.
You should have argued again.
I did, but I was running out of ammunition.
So, in one speech, he destroys all the work we have done. Good. Fine.
Why not? You were the ones who destroyed it by delay.
Delay does not destroy agreements. One can always renew efforts. But to announce the proposal...
He had the right.
He bears the responsibility.
For what? For telling the world? Why is that so terrible?
Don't be ridiculous.
No, tell me. Why is it so bad if the world knows what we're discussing?
Because it makes us look like fools. If we accept your proposal now, what will the rest of the world say? Ah, the Americans have finally thought of a clever plan. Thank God the unimaginative Russians have agreed.
The rest of the world, if they said anything, would say, at last, two maniacs have had a moment of sanity.
Yes, they would say that too. But first they would say it is an American peace, an American security.
Who cares whose peace it is?
You do. You do not want a Russian peace. 2 years ago we announced to the world a plan of our own, just as good as yours. And you rejected it.
There were significant problems with that plan.
Yes, it was ours. Now please, John, stop pretending. You know neither of our countries can afford to be the second in the quest for peace.
What quest for peace? At this rate, there is no quest for peace.
but there's a quest for the appearance of the quest for peace. These are negotiations, John. There are rules. There are rules. There are forms. You know them as well as I do. Your president knows them too. When he announced the proposal, he knew we would reject it.
Why did your government delay so long? What was it about the proposal you objected to?
Why go into it?
It's our job! Was it the total number of warheads?
John.
Was it?
No.
The percentage of land-based missiles?
No.
Data exchange? On-site inspection?
It's useless too.
I want to know. Cruise missile reductions? Mobile missile verification?
Not really.
The testing moratorium? The research question?
No.
BMD restrictions? The SAT?
It wasn't any.
C-cubed issues, SLBMs, MXs.
No!
No.
Not MX, or SLBMs, or SLCMs, or SDI, or FBS, or CEC, or SALT, or SDART, START, or any of it. We had no objections to anything in your proposal. You understand? Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. We liked the whole proposal.
I don't understand. You liked it?
Very much.
Then why did you delay so long?
Because your proposal was too good.
Too good?
It could have led to real arms reductions. Serious arms.
Don't you want that?
Of course, but also we're afraid of it.
Why? It's a treaty. We've made treaties before.
Look at these treaties, John. They aren't treaties. They're blueprints. We determine what weapons we'll build in the next few years, then agree to let each other build them. We get rid of small systems so that we can keep bigger ones. We trade obsolete technology for the state of the art. We take weapons out of Europe so that we can put up new ones in space. Then we say to the world, see, we're capable of restraint. Here is a small step forward. It's laughable.
But it is a step forward. Every treaty is. Each time we come stumbling to some sort of an agreement, even if it's self-serving, even if it's flawed, that's progress.
It's not progress to take a step and slide back three. Every 10 years we wake up and say, it's time to take the first step. But meanwhile, we've spent a decade creating bargaining chips, new weapons built expressly so that they can be bargained away later. And what's the result? We build and get rid of bargaining chips. Nothing more. The real arsenals remain untouched. In fact, they grow.
You're right. Each year, each month, each day, someone is proposing a new weapon system. Someone is securing a grant for more research, dreaming up new technology that will do God knows what destruction to our economies, if nothing else. How, knowing that, can we let any opportunity slip through our fingers? Especially this opportunity, this treaty, these comprehensive reductions, these real reductions.
I know. But we have problems with reductions such as these.
What are they?
We don't trust you.
You don't trust us?
Do you trust us?
Yes. Well, we try to. But whether we trust each other or not, the proposal has provision. It has safeguards.
We don't trust the safeguards.
There are checks on the safeguards, verification.
We don't trust them.
Andre.
Even if there were checks on the checks on the checks, we wouldn't trust them.
Why not?
Because we don't trust you. Who knows what you're making right now that lies outside this proposal?
Okay. And we're going to now move to Act 2, Scene 2, which is the final scene. It's 6 weeks later, early spring. The woods are filled with warm late afternoon light. Spring flowers cover the area. Honeyman sits on a bench staring straight ahead. Botvinnik is upstage, bent over picking flowers at the edge of the trees.
This will be the last one. This will be the final glorious touch, eh? It needs a little blue, don't you think?
I suppose.
What is this flower called, this blue one?
It's called a flower.
No. What would a botanist call it?
A flower?
No, no. If he had to designate it for another scientist.
A flower.
The woods are filled with them. It's very beautiful this time of year, don't you think?
Aren't you even a little bit angry?
I remember the first time my leader said no to an agreement I had worked out. It was with Mr. McIntyre's predecessor,
Mr. Sand.
Yes, yes, Mr. Sand. He and I worked a very long time on that one. We had such large dreams. We were both new. Each of us was eager, so overjoyed at the creativity of our solutions. We marched out of these very woods and told the world. A major arms reduction, we said. A path to sanity. Of course, 4 weeks later, our governments politely suggested we had overstepped our authority. Go back to the woods, work a little more, they said, and stay out of the woods. This proposal didn't do so badly. At least it was 6 weeks before your president.
He looked me straight in the eye and said, "Don't try so hard. Don't try so hard."
It was only a euphemism.
For what?
For don't try at all. Really, you must control yourself. Switzerland has strict laws about littering.
I know.
They're terribly compulsive about it. It can be quite risky to throw the flowers about.
I know. I was almost arrested for it this morning.
You were? Really? Tell me about it.
I don't want to talk about it. It's a pointless story.
Oh, please tell me. An arrest in Switzerland. How wonderful.
It's nothing. I threw a gum wrapper on the sidewalk.
Oh!
Really, there are more important things to talk about.
Not today. Please. Let's take advantage of this exquisite time when everything has broken down. Tell me your pointless story.
Why?
It'll be such a relief.
For you? For who?
For you.
It was nothing. I threw this wrapper and suddenly there was this very old man beside me, grabbing me. I thought he was a lunatic. He was yelling at me in German. Why did he yell in German? Do I dress like a German? Anyway, he was trying to make me stop. I speeded up. I didn't know who he was.
He could have been a very old terrorist.
Why am I telling this?
Because it's crucial. Go on.
He yelled at me louder, in French this time. I stopped and stared at him. I didn't say anything, I just stared. He kept right on yelling, only he switched to Italian. This went on for a solid minute, like I was his bad child, all in Italian. Finally, I broke in. I said, "I don't speak Italian." And he went back to French.
No.
Yes, I said, "I don't speak French." And he went to German.
Really?
Yes, so I yelled back at him, "I don't speak French, German, or Italian. I'm an American, damn it. What the hell do you want?" And he turned and pointed at my gum wrapper. And then I saw he was a cop. He was a Swiss policeman.
Oh, dear.
I didn't notice at first. He had his hat in his hand, and he was so old that I... But there he was. In uniform. He must have been going to his own retirement party.
Swiss police are very officious.
And he tried to drag me back to this gum wrapper. He literally tried to drag me. I said, "Tell me what you won." And he said, "Aufheben! The paper. Aufheben!
Pick it up."
Exactly.
And did you?
No. I didn't pick it up.
Really? Why not?
Would you?
Oh, of course.
You'd let a little old man drag you back? A little old Swiss joke of a policeman? With people watching?
Especially with people watching.
Well, I didn't. I pulled my arm away and I wanted to say, "Look, I spend all day, every day, working to prevent the total destruction of every living thing on this planet. The whole planet. Even Switzerland. I'm trying to preserve the last few precious days of life you may have coming to you. But I can't do that if I'm not allowed to throw gum wrappers on the sidewalk. You understand? It's too much pressure. I can't worry about everything.
But you didn't say that.
No. I said, I'm a very important person.
What did he say to you?
Alfhaven.
And you said?
No. Then he tried to arrest me. He flashed his pitiful Swiss badge and put his hat on. By this time, old people were stopping, looking at me and shaking their heads as though the rapper was a dead infant or something. A couple of teenagers were standing there laughing.
Congratulations. An international incident.
Anyway, he tried to grab me again, and I don't know why I did this, but I actually pushed him.
No.
I don't know why I did it.
Did you hurt him?
No, he didn't even fall over. But the others, the people around us, they gasped. They literally gasped. The old cop looked at me like I was insane.
You were.
So I quick pulled out my identification, held it open, and said, "Diplomat," and pointed to myself, and the cop just shrank from me. I took a step toward him and said, "Diplomat," again, and he kept backing away. And the whole crowd backed away. I kept saying, "It's all right, I'm a diplomat." But the circle of people got wider and wider, and the cop turned and walked away from me as fast as he could. And everyone else did the same, except the two teenagers. They just stared at me. Not like they expected me to do anything, just because I was the only thing left to look at. I've never behaved that way in public before.
You were having a bad day.
I was not having a bad day. I am turning into something here. Some kind of a monster. Some kind of littering old man pushing diplomatic monster. Some special, newly created kind of thing. What are we doing here?
We are talking.
No, I mean, what on earth are we doing here?
The questions you ask are too large. Let me ask a smaller one. What is your favorite color?
My favorite color?
Yes. What is it?
Why do you want to know that?
I have my reasons. Is it green? Red? Yellow?
I don't want to talk about this.
It's a simple question. I'm sure we can handle it.
Don't mock me.
You're offended.
Yes, I'm offended. I'm disgusted. What are we doing here?
My favorite color is blue.
Stop talking about color.
I have to talk about color.
Why?
I want to buy you a gift.
We give each other gifts all the time. That's what international negotiating teams do. Sit down, stare at each other a few months, exchange gifts, and leave. Why does your delegation want to give us gifts?
No. Not our delegation. Just me. I want to give you a gift. A tie, perhaps. In a color you like. Something you will be happy to have.
Why?
Do I need a reason?
Yes.
As a consolation prize, then, because we will never achieve a treaty.
We will achieve a treaty. Someday we will.
Very well, then. A victory prize. I want to give you a gift. What does it matter why?
It could be the difference between honoring me and humiliating me.
What about blue? Is blue your favorite?
No, it's not.
Brown.
Nobody's favorite color is brown.
Why do you make me guess? Tell me.
My favorite color is orange.
Orange?
Yes, orange.
You expect me to buy you an orange tie?
Don't buy me a tie. I don't want a tie.
All right, I won't.
Good. I can see why McIntyre left.
You think he left because of me?
Who wouldn't? No one can deal with you. You take serious things lightly, light things seriously. You waste months of time, and what's worse, you never even try to be optimistic. Don't you see how killing that is?
No.
How can you be so negative?
You're the one who doesn't want the tie.
I think you were made for this place. You were born to sit here and stare at the world and say no.
Why? Because I'm a Russian?
No, because you're...
That's it, isn't it? You think Russians are all alike. You think we train our children to say no at the dinner table. Do you want your food? No! Do you want to drink? No!
Andre!
You think we like to say no? You think we train our backsides to sit for days without pain, yes?
I'm going back now, Andre.
No!
Why not?
I have something to tell you.
What?
Guess.
No.
You're so negative. Very well. I will tell you. I'm leaving.
What?
I'm leaving. Bye-bye.
You mean you're going back home for a week or two?
No. I'm leaving.
Your government's pulling out of the delegation?
No, no, no. Listen to your language, John. They're saying I, Andrei Lovitch Botvinnik, I am leaving. For good. Goodbye.
You're leaving your post?
Yes.
Why? We're in the middle of negotiations.
I will be replaced.
When are you leaving?
A week or two.
A week? How soon you'll be replaced?
A month or two.
Andre.
Are you worried about delay? This is your job, delay. In all my years here, it has been one long delay. So tell me, do you have a favorite color beside orange? I would like to get you something.
Farewell gift?
Yes.
Are they making you retire?
Well, of course not.
Is it because you pushed for our proposal? Did you get in trouble with it?
You Americans always think the same thing. Kremlin intrigue, trips to Siberia. No. I merely intend to go home. It's time.
Is it a medical problem?
No.
It's just that you've seemed more distracted than usual in the sessions.
Me? What about you? Pushing old men in the street?
That was...
You don't have to apologize, no. I have served for many years here by doing absolutely nothing. Now it is time for a new man to come and do absolutely nothing. In this way, we achieve continuity of results. So, it's been very pleasurable with you. I thank you and say goodbye.
Why are you leaving?
I told you, shake!
Why are you leaving?
There is no real reason. I'm losing concentration at the table. A little bit. My mind is beginning to wander, slightly, when I'm here.
To wander?
More and more.
Why not take some time off, a week or two? Maybe that would...
Never do nothing. I'm degenerating. It happens to everyone. Each day now I feel like I could say anything. The worst thing, at the worst moment. It's an interesting feeling. It's like my brain drying up instead of my eyes. Work without hope is a dry thing. It's better, more realistic, but it's very dry. Will you miss me?
Don't go.
I have to.
Rest a little. You can come back.
The decay is inevitable.
It's not inevitable. Don't go. We're working on something here, Andre.
On what?
On something. My God, we've established a process, the two of us. If you're replaced, that's all gone.
No, it isn't. The new man will...
The new man will not be you.
You're very flattering. But let me make a suggestion. If you're so unhappy that I am leaving, then why don't you leave too?
Don't be ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. I go back to Leningrad, you go back to Warsaw. We're both better off.
In what way?
In every way. Listen to me. You're a good negotiator. You're smart, tough, charming. You can say no almost as well as me. They'll keep you here a long time. And after long enough, you will be like I am now.
You're fine now.
I don't even remember why I'm here. Leave when I do. Otherwise, you will break down.
I won't.
This morning, you were almost arrested.
That was a freak accident.
You will have more of them.
What if I do? What's it matter as long as I'm here working?
Working for what? For progress? There is no progress here. Only an illusion. Every treaty we have negotiated has been followed up by unprecedented arms build-up. 25 years ago, we signed our first treaty.
We had a few hundred warheads each, a few hundred. Today, 13 treaties later, how many warheads do we have? 50,000. If our leaders ever do accept real cuts, it will only be to gain a political advantage. When the advantage disappears, the cuts will too. There will be new weapons building. There will always be new weapons building. So listen to me. You're still young. Why grow old in this way?
Why should you care? You're leaving.
Well, I'm still your friend.
Friends share hope. If you go home now, we will never have been friends. Do you understand? We've been colleagues, associates, counterparts, fellow workers on the same problem, representatives, delegates, instruments of policy, but never, never friends.
I am your friend.